This is Don Letts, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Accra. Stay tuned.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Accra, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show, and we have all sorts of songs and sounds and stories for you today, including we'll hear about the emerald ash borer, the invasive species that's killing local trees, and we'll also hear about the climate rally in Albany on November 13th that's also an attempt to stop the killing of local trees and the earth in general. Plus, we'll hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all starts after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
In air waves controlled.
Electro Mix is a series to document the history of experimental electronic music from the 50s to the 80s. Pioneers who paved the way for what was to become techno, ambient, electronica, and most of what we are listening to. Essential Culture on air every Tuesday from 11 to 12 a.m.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of FET Press in Hudson, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Paul Kirby reports for the Daily Freeman that the number of active coronavirus cases in Ulster County jumped 118% since November 4th. On November 14th, the number of active COVID-19 cases was 523, while there were just 204 cases 10 days before. Ulster County has more than doubled its cases in the most recent 10-day span. Neighboring Dutchess County reported 608 active cases as of November 13th, up from 62% from the 375 total November 1st. Almost all Ulster cases come from the unvaccinated, as Ulster County Executive Pat Ryan reported last week that just 1.15% of vaccinated county residents have contracted COVID. Ulster County currently has a 4.4% positivity rate among those tested, while Dutchess County is at 2.95%. Columbia County has stopped reporting daily COVID-19 figures, but currently has 100 active cases, up 20 from the week before. Greene County, meanwhile, reported 34 more cases November 15th, with 129 current active cases, and with a smaller population that is much higher rate than across the Hudson River.
Joseph Spector reports in the Poughkeepsie Journal that coronavirus cases jumped 25% in New York in the week ending November 14th. Most of the new cases came in the Finger Lakes and western New York area, where COVID-19 positivity rates were above 8% for the first time in months. In the Hudson Valley, 2.5% of those tested had the virus. New York now ranks 27th among the states where coronavirus was spreading the fastest on a per-person basis, according to USA Today. Governor Kathy Hochul said in a statement, and I quote, "As the weather gets colder and the holiday season approaches, friends and family will be spending more time indoors, increasing the risk of transmission and threatening the incredible progress we've made so far. In order to keep our loved ones safe and reduce the spread of both COVID-19 and seasonal influenza, I encourage New Yorkers to get vaccinated, wear a mask indoors, and remember to wash your hands," end quote. Read more about this story in the Poughkeepsie Journal.
Ted Remsnyder is reporting for Columbia Green Media that the town of Catskill is now looking for public input on whether the town should opt out of allowing cannabis dispensaries or on-site cannabis consumption lounges. Municipalities have until December 31st to decide to take action. The Catskill Town Board will hold a special public forum on this question and more on November 17th at the Robert C. Antonelli Senior Center in the village. Quote, "It's going to be a public forum where we want to get the feelings of the community," unquote, Catskill Town Supervisor Dale Finch said. Quote, "We want to see whether they're for or against having dispensaries. The other part of the equation is whether or not they want to allow what you could call lounges in the community. So there are two options under the cannabis law. You can opt out of both of them, or one of them, or one or the other," unquote. Possession and use of marijuana are now legal for adults 21 and older, and the state and municipalities are not allowed to opt out of that portion of the legislation. The board is not required to hold a public forum, but Finch said he would strongly consider the public's will before making a decision. Quote, "Honestly, I really want to hear from the people of the town of Catskill to get opinions on it first," unquote, he said. Quote, "It's a revenue-driven thing through the state of New York. We want to see what other impacts it would have on our community," unquote. Finch noted the town was not caught off guard by the state legislation, but said the administration is taking its time before deciding to opt out or not. Quote, "We had talked about it for several months, and we wanted to have community input before we made a decision," unquote, the supervisor said. Finch said the town has received only one inquiry from an outside business about establishing a cannabis dispensary in the town. Quote, "It wasn't site-specific at all," unquote, he said. Quote, "They really just wanted to feel the town out a little bit to see if we were leaning one way or the other," unquote. Read more about the story at HudsonValley360.com.
Chloe Callahan reports for the Times Union that a new state law goes into effect January 1st, requiring businesses and institutions that generate an annual average of 2 tons of unused food per week to donate excess edible food and recycle all remaining food scraps if they are close to an organic recycler. The New York State Food Scraps Recycling Law will impact restaurants, grocery stores, hotels and motels, colleges and universities, malls, event centers, and other large generators of food scraps, but not hospitals, nursing homes, adult care facilities, farms, and K-12 schools. The hope is it will also impact the environment and cut greenhouse gas emissions generated by food waste. Much composting has already begun in the Hudson Valley. Josephine Papagni, co-owner-operator of Ulster-based Greenway Environmental Services, who started collecting food scraps in 2000, said, and I quote, "I think the law was written as a starting point. Many of those who are generating 2 tons a week are already collecting and sending the food waste to be composted. The law creates awareness for those few who don't know and sets the stage to make sure we have adequate food waste processing resources," end quote. The DEC says about 40% of the food produced in this country goes uneaten, and an estimated 2.8 million New Yorkers are food insecure. The hope is the new law moves some of that excess edible food from landfills to hungry mouths. Ulster County passed a similar Food Waste Prevention and Recovery Act in 2019 and will move from a 2-ton per week average requirement to just half a ton per week on July 1st, 2023. Bard College is already composting and praises the new law. Lori Husted, Chief Sustainability Officer at Bard College, said, and I quote, "It's like a triple win. It helps lower our carbon emissions while saving in our wallets and helping people too. This is a great opportunity to question the system we're a part of and to think, can we do things differently? And that's what a law does. I'm very pleased it's here," end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Dylan Moscoso is reporting for the Legislative Gazette that a Troy-based barge operation has proposed the construction of a new mooring site on the Hudson River at the dock of the former Atlas Cement Plant Company located just south of Hudson. While the new barge mooring would provide sites for boats to dock for loading and unloading of sand and gravel, the plan is being proposed by a Troy-based operator and would not benefit the local community as much as it would harm local tourism. In a letter to the Army Corps of Engineers, Scenic Hudson has expressed its opposition to the plan. Citing a concern for the Olana State Historic Site, the group noted that while the proposed one-acre mooring site is past the five-mile threshold for, quote, visual impact, unquote, it only passes the threshold by a third of a mile, and precautionary measures alongside visual analysis of the proposed site's impacted is necessary. Scenic Hudson has requested that the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers hold a public hearing in Germantown to give stakeholders a chance to ask questions and be heard. The group is also asking that the public comment period be held open for at least 30 days after the public hearing is concluded. Haley Carlock, the Director of Environmental Advocacy and Legal Affairs at Scenic Hudson, said, quote, "We are also concerned that the action may set a precedent for additional moorings in the vicinity, which would cause cumulative impacts on views and may set precedent for moorings for oil barges in other reaches of the Hudson River," unquote. In 2016, a similar proposal introduced by the United States Coast Guard to park oil barges in the mid-Hudson River ultimately failed when a law was passed prohibiting the parking of oil barges. However, the loading and unloading of products unrelated to oil are permitted. Current proposal is for the shipment of crushed rocks. Read more in the legislativegazette.com.
Heather Bellow reports in the Berkshire Eagle that supply shortages, bidding problems, and cost increases have made it difficult for the town of Great Barrington to complete various roadwork projects and a downtown parking lot overhaul. Department of Public Works Superintendent Sean Van Dusen said work will be completed soon on front steps at Town Hall, the retaining wall under the railroad trestle on Taconic Avenue, and the downtown parking lot with drainage problems. But coronavirus pandemic-related supply shortages, delays, inflation, and inundated contractors have nearly doubled projected costs. Van Dusen said, and I quote, "It's really crippled our ability to get projects done. Prices are all over the board. You can't estimate them properly," end quote. Replacing the Ramsdell Library boiler costs 40% more, and its arrival date is a mystery. But the downtown triplex cinema lot will be done by Thanksgiving. Van Dusen says with new lighting and a charger station with two stalls for electric vehicles. And you can read more about this story in the Berkshire Eagle.
Nick Reisman is reporting for New York State of Politics that a new effort is underway to return the name Tappan Zee to the twin cable-stayed bridge that spans the Hudson River between Tarrytown and Nyack. Democratic Assemblymember Tom Abinanti, who represents Central Westchester County, has introduced a proposal that would restore Tappan Zee, a reference to the Native Americans who lived in the Hudson Valley region as well as the Dutch settlers in the area, and keep the name Mario Cuomo alongside it. A landing bridge at a welcome center on the Westchester County side of the river would be named in honor of Malcolm Wilson, a Republican who succeeded Nelson Rockefeller as governor. Quote, "Tappan Zee symbolizes the history and heritage of the area," Abinanti said. "The bridge was opened in 2018, and lawmakers subsequently approved a bill that named the new bridge after former Governor Andrew Cuomo's father. But the bridge naming was controversial, with Republicans in the Hudson Valley and residents alike backing efforts to change the name to the original Tappan Zee. Quote, it's time that we all came together and reached a compromise, unquote, Abinanti said. Quote, let's stop the war over the name. It's time to heal, unquote. Read more about this story at NewYorkStateOfPolitics.com.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Tuesday, mostly sunny with a high near 45 degrees. Tuesday night, mostly clear with a low of around 28. And on Wednesday, partly sunny with a high near 49 degrees. And Wednesday night, mostly cloudy with a low of around 41. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Green and Columbia counties.
You have tuned into all sorts of creative community voices on the radio Tuesday, November 16th, including at 10 a.m. We're live from Acre with Justin Maiman and the Ginger Radio Hour. And his guest today is Kathy Stevens from the Catskill Animal Sanctuary in Saugerties. Then at 11 a.m., tune in for some early electro mix from Philip Petit. And his show today features tracks from Pierre Henry, Kraftwerk, and Ivan Potocic, among others. After the local news at noon, DJ Patty Boom takes over live from Cornwallville in Greene County with the Vinyl Freedom Show. Then at 4 p.m., tune in for the WGXC Afternoon Show with Randall Martin and Kim Singletary on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM. At 7 p.m., it's time for the Race Talk Show with Kimberly Irwin live from Hudson. And then we head to Catskill where we're live with Johnny Sturman and Carmen Borgia with the Ukuleles Unleashed Show at 8 p.m. And we're live from Columbia County at 10 p.m. with the Battlefield Earth Show with Dan Seward on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM. All together now, all together now, all together now, all together now, all together
now, all together now, all together now. To get a local event mentioned on All Together Now, go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
The Museum of Firefighting in Hudson holds a Fire Truck Pinewood Derby race Saturday, November 20th from 10:30 a.m. until noon. That's at the Museum of Firefighting, 1117 Harry Howard Avenue in Hudson. You can call 518-822-1875, extension 17, for more information. And also go to the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org for this and many other local events.
Five, four, three, two, one.
What's the situation, Captain?
This is Cheryl Kay, host of Situation Fluxus on WGXC, 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. The show is a weekly one-hour program focused on jazz and improvised music, news, radio, conversations, and more that airs on Thursdays at 10 a.m. and Fridays at 4 a.m. To contact us about Situation Fluxus, thejazzdisturbance at gmail.com or info at wgxc.org. Keep tuned in to 90.7 FM, wavefarm.org/listen, tune in, and on the Wavefarm radio app on your smartphone. Our website is WGXC.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Tuesday, November 16th. And early this morning, we see the temperature range is 29 degrees in Mackey to 35 in Ulster Park. A high of 47 is expected at 2 p.m. Overnight, temperatures fall to 28 degrees. Tomorrow will be cloudy with a high of 49 degrees, and it will have a windy afternoon. Wednesday night, temperatures drop to 43 degrees before bouncing back up to 60 on Thursday. Unfortunately, that heat comes from a warm front that will drop rain all night into Friday, possibly leaving some snow in some places. Friday, during the day, will be dry with a high of 45. The closest expected snowfall is in the mountains on the western edge of Greene County. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 12:33 a.m., low tide at 6:58 a.m., high tide again at 1:03 p.m., and low tide again at 7:32 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 47 degrees. Sunset today will be at 4:21 p.m., and sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:43 a.m. Looking way up, we see Earth is entering a stream of debris coming from Comet Temple Tuttle, which will give us the annual Leonid meteor shower. It is expected to peak this year at 10 to 15 meteors per hour early tomorrow morning. Solar wind speed is currently 563 kilometers per second at 7.9 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently terrible. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 4, unsettled. The current sunspot number is 23. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Maker Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Laura of Skodak Landing, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Wake up! Wake up, wake up, wake up! Up you wake, up you wake, up you wake, up you wake! This is Mr. Senior Love Daddy, your voice of choice, the world's only 12-hour strong man on the air, here on We Love Radio.
Last week, the Attorney General of New York released their report about the sexual harassment charges against Andrew Cuomo. In the interview with investigators, Governor Cuomo said when asked about the song Do You Love Me by The Contours, he said, I don't even know that song, unquote. Quote, you don't know that? You don't know the Do You Love Me, unquote, asked an incredulous June Kim, the investigator interviewing Cuomo. Quote, do another verse, unquote, replied Cuomo, who also claimed not to know Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen. But investigators also released audio tapes, and they included this exchange with Charlotte Bennett, one of the women who has accused Cuomo of sexual harassment. It includes Cuomo singing the song Do You Love Me by The Contours.
Hello.
Hi, Governor.
Yeah.
This is Charlotte.
Okay. Are you ready?
I am ready.
You don't know that song?
No.
Before your time.
It's before my time, but I appreciated the singing.
Do you love me? Do you really love me? Do you love me? Do you care?
I'll have to listen now.
Yep. It's like the 50s. It's before even my time.
Oh, there you go. Now I have less of an excuse.
You ready?
Yes.
You broke my heart, 'cause I couldn't dance. You didn't even want me around, and now I'm back to let you know I can really shake them down.
Watch me now. Hey. Work, work, work it out, baby.
escape from reality. Open your eyes, look up to the skies and see. I'm just a poor boy. I need no sympathy. Because I'm easy come, easy go. Little high, little low. Any way the wind blows doesn't really matter.
Killed a man, put a gun against his head, pulled my trigger, now he's dead. Mama, life had just begun, but now I've gone and thrown it all away. Mama,
Mamma mia,
mamma mia, let me go. Beelzebub has a devil put aside for me, for me, for me.
Just gotta get out.
A pity she does not exist. A shame he's not a fag. The only girl I ever loved was Andrew and Drag. There is no hope of love for me. From here on I go stag. The only girl I ever loved is Andrew and Drag. Andrew and Drag.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We got the Hispanics coming on our side, African Americans coming on our side. We're taking down the Biden regime.
Former Trump White House strategist Steve Bannon spoke as he surrendered to law enforcement Monday, appearing for a hearing after being indicted by a grand jury for defying a congressional subpoena. Bannon faces two charges of contempt of Congress for failing to appear for deposition before the January 6 committee and for refusing to provide documents to the panel. Former Democratic Texas State Representative Beto O'Rourke announced he will run for governor of the Lone Star State. In a fundraising email to supporters, he touted himself as a unity candidate. Here's O'Rourke criticizing Republican lawmakers.
They're focusing on the kind of extremist policies around abortion or permitless carry or even in our schools that really only divide us.
Democratic Vermont Senator Patrick Leahy, the longest-serving active member of the U.S. Senate, announced he'll retire after 8 terms. His last expected day is January 2, 2023. At a press conference, Leahy reflected on his career, which began when he was elected to the Senate in 1974.
And within just a few months of taking office, as the newest and by far most junior member of the Senate Armed Services Committee, we were asked to vote to reauthorize and continue the war in Vietnam.
President Biden signed an executive order addressing violence against indigenous communities, particularly women. It directs the Departments of Justice, Interior, Homeland Security, and Health and Human Services to create a strategy to improve public safety and justice for Native Americans. President of the Stockbridge Muncie Band of Mohican Indians, Shannon Hosley, spoke Monday during a White House virtual summit with tribal leaders.
Tribal sovereignty and self-governance, as well as honoring the federal trust responsibility to tribal nations, should be the cornerstone of federal Indian policy.
Biden also signed the infrastructure bill and tapped former New Orleans Mayor Mitch Landrieu to coordinate implementation of the $1.2 trillion bipartisan legislation. Meanwhile, at the White House late Monday, President Biden met virtually with Chinese President Xi Jinping. The two leaders discussed trade, military aggression, and human rights. Finally, in Kenosha, Wisconsin, lawyers delivered closing arguments Monday in the trial of Kyle Rittenhouse, the teenage gunman who fatally shot two people and wounded a third during protests last year over police brutality. I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Are listening. You're listening to 90.7 WGXC Acre, Catskills. Today, East Durham. Catskills.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
So maybe some of our listeners have seen some of those mesmerizing patterns on the barks of trees outside, on the ash trees. And so the emerald ash borer have been killing off the ash trees in this area and beyond. And I've been fascinated by the designs that they've been leaving, but also the destruction. And so naturally, I reached out to the More Trees Arborist Collective to get to know what understanding they have about the emerald ash borer. So joining me today from the More Trees Arborist Collective are Andrew Lynn and Christian Grigoraskos. So what have you noticed with the emerald ash borer and the ash tree?
Christian, do you want to start?
Sure, yeah. First of all, I love ash trees. I have a fondness for them because when you see them in the forest, they really do good at growing and establishing themselves in stands, and some of the bigger ones in full sun are really beautiful trees. But we've been noticing the decline of a lot of them in a lot of places all over the region because of the emerald ash borer. So we have a lot of firewood, really good firewood from a bunch of removals we've done through our tree work. But I've been noticing, you know, pertaining to this conversation mostly, I'm like, what are we going to do about this bug that's wiping out all these trees? Is that a lot of the removals that have been done in recent time have resprouted. And some of them resprout and put on a lot of growth in just one season. And that's what I'm most intrigued by, because it seems like the root system wants to keep living. And I'm curious of how long the new stand will survive before the borer is able to move in. Andrew, what have you noticed?
So, to explain to the audience sort of what the emerald ash borer is, it's basically an insect that was introduced, you know, from Asia at some point, and it's created infestations around in different places. For instance, where my parents live in southwestern Pennsylvania, there's virtually no ash trees remaining. You can see the dead ashes along the highway in the forest. So, you know, and it's here, basically. It's come this way. We're several years behind, but recently there's been a lot of, as Christian mentioned, ash tree removal in the city. I think Troy, for instance, was able to budget to try to save 100 trees by injecting them with pesticides systemically. So there's, you know, some conversation around that to be had as to whether, you know, that's a positive thing or whether that might have repercussions down the road. But generally speaking, large ash trees, as they are in the woods, as you know, large specimen ash trees are not going to be around for that long. And I also find it interesting to see how the sprouts that come from the root systems where there's been trees that are cut down, you know, how long they last. Is there some cyclical nature of the insect that the tree will be able to subvert and survive in the long term? In the short term, what we've got is folks who are able to save their ash trees using, you know, human created chemicals. And in the forest, we've got a mass death of ash trees. I think the other thing that's notable about this, you know, pandemic, as it were, of emerald ash borer is that we have streets, for instance, in this city, Troy, where the only tree that was planted on a street was ash. not every street, obviously, but there are spans of them. So it speaks to, you know, our desire for like patterns and lack of biodiversity, like coming back to sort of bite us in the butt when suddenly all of the trees on a street are removed and there's like, you go from full canopy to none.
From my understanding, the lack of biodiversity mixed with the globalization of bringing a lot of goods from different areas is a large contributor to what most people refer to as invasive species, which is the emerald ash borer. Is that your understanding?
Yeah, that, you know, it's super interesting to hear that term. And we talk to a lot of folks about their trees and we hear it get thrown in like, oh, these invasives. And, you know, I consider myself invasive, or at least whoever, you know, preceded me and decided to come over on a boat to join in the party of this globalized society that we live in. So it's really, you know, behavior, right? It's a certain type of behavior is invasive, where it's like, what about opportunist, right? Like we refer to human immigrants as, you know, people seizing opportunity because they see a better opportunity, and then plant species all of a sudden being brought over because they're nice to look at for your ornamental garden, you know, are called invasive when they see an opportunity in the local ecology where there's no pests that feed on them to just go haywire, kind of like the ailanthus or burning bush, and there's a whole slew of them that just do really well at growing. So the terminology is curious, and it is very warlike and kind of harsh to be referring to these plants as invasive species and not talking about people or other ideas that cause equal harm to our society as invasive. That's my spiel on the term.
I feel like a term that would be, if opportunist is too posy for people in terms of talking about quote unquote invasive species, maybe to Christian's point, like maybe colonial or colonist species, because that's more of a conversation that's reaching the mainstream in terms of a critique of colonialism. And it's easy to get bogged down in the terminology, but at the same time, that's what frames the conversation. So it is important. But I like that reference to, you know, the fact that white colonists, I mean, we are invaders, right? So how does that apply? And then in the conversation around invasive species, which I think certainly there's reason for agencies like the DEC and so forth to put efforts towards trying to contain some of these things that are having a pretty clear negative ecological effect when it's at a point that they can actually potentially attain that, which isn't everything. That conversation doesn't sort of draw into the critique of the bigger invasion that preceded all of this stuff, which is the invasion of the continent. And that's, you know, so that's the sort of scale of conversation that's more interesting to me, going that far back, but also that far forward. To really think about colonization as an invasion, you take yourself back 400 or 500 years, and 400 or 500 years down the future, our ecology, if it exists at all, is going to be very different. So how that is not part of the that same conversation, there's a lot of disjointedness that doesn't make sense for me.
So what would you like our listeners to take away from what was just said?
Really, when it comes down to it, my brain goes towards our relationship with the land, which is like the simplest way of approaching it. Because either if you're pro-native or pro-invasive, like you have some sort of relationship to the land. And in my humble opinion, I think a big way that we're going about all this stuff is wrong, because we don't have the whole view. And that's because our relationship with the land has largely been corrupted by the dominant, you know, capitalist paradigm. And in order to get back to relating to plants and considering them beings and understanding how ecology works, like not scientifically, but on this, on a deeper connective level, you know, like learning about the landscape from stories your grandfather told you. Like, that's where I want to get back to. And I think that this conversation would be drastically different if that was intact. You know, it's simultaneously how we've collectively turned our back on the land and brought in all these global components without understanding the ripple effects that have created this so-called problem. But hopefully it's just an opportunity to get us to start relating in a positive way again, once again.
And I would just, you know, echo all that Christian just said, but I would add that, you know, for folks, listeners out there, these species that are, you know, becoming monocultures in certain areas are everywhere, and watching them is a way to connect. Whether you're able to participate in doing anything about it is kind of a different next level thing. But, you know, if you're looking at burning bush as it's right now, a solid red understory in some of the forests, or driving down the road to a wall of Japanese knotweed, or seeing streets lined with dead ash trees, it's very in your face once you start to look at it. And I think part of what Christian is getting at is like that built that relationship to nature is a missing piece in the conversation about species that are becoming monocultures in these niches. And just to start looking out for them and thinking about the bigger dimensions of their presence.
Thank you, Andrew and Zinger. Christian from More Trees Arborist Collective. We'll have you on again.
You can check us out at www.moretrees.coop. That's .coop.
Work around, baby.
On Saturday, November 13th, climate activists gathered at the state capitol in Albany, about 300, with similar rallies taking place in New York City and Rochester. They were calling on state legislators to take action on climate, something state lawmakers did not really do the last 2 years. A major focus was on the Climate and Community Investment Act, a polluter penalty on those who burn fossil fuels. We hear from six speakers from the rally.
Hi, my name's Diane Collins. I've come down to Albany from Glens Falls with my friend Catherine Atherton. We're both part of a group up there called North Country Earth Action. And we have lighted signs that we show in our community and this wonderful big banner, Protect Our Earth. Well, we wanted to come down here today to be part of the group lobbying for the funding bill that's so important to start penalizing polluters. It's really important that the legislature take action. This bill has been in committee for 2 years, and it's time for it to get to the floor and to be passed. So we're hopeful.
And I see on your sign, Protect Our Earth, stand up, speak out, take action. You want people to call Congress. What do you want Congress to do?
Just to let them know that we care out here. Time's running out. The clock is ticking. We want to keep in touch with Congress because we need legislation in order to deal with this imminent disaster.
And how's your local congressman up there in Glens Falls on these issues?
We're not happy with Elise Stefanik. She's a Trump ally these days. We're very unhappy with her. And we have hopes for a new fellow. Do you remember Matt Castelli running? We met him last week, and we're hopeful that with his government and military background, he'll be able to do a good job standing up to Elise Stefanik.
Thank you very much.
My name's Pete Looker. I'm affiliated with the Human Beings of the U.S. and the world.
And why are you here today?
Because the Mother Earth has an infection, and what happens with an infection is you start getting a fever. And you start sweating, and Mother Earth has an infection of stupid human beings that need to get their act together.
Now, this is a rally very focused at the state level. Are there particular issues you would like to see our state legislators deal with on climate?
Just dealing with it now and not waiting 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. That's the main thing. There's a lot of things. There's a lot of high-tech things, but I like some simple things like retrofitting houses, which is much more cost-effective, and we need to do that now.
What are some of the things you've done in your own home to try to reduce carbon emissions?
Well, when we rebuilt it, after a fire, we built it super insulated for the time 30 years ago, but we had it re-insulated, and we put up solar panels so that we'll get electricity from the sun, and we try and use very little. We space heat. We now have a heat pump that heats our living room, and then the rest of the house we put shirts and blankets on.
And the heat pump's an air heat pump, I assume?
Yeah, it's cheaper than the ground source one. We don't use that much. We try not to use that much heat.
And I know you're a big fan of mass transit. How is our mass transit system looking these days in Capital District?
I guess it's slowly getting back up to normal, but I actually have to admit that I haven't been on it. I used to bike and bus everywhere when I'm not working, and I've still been hesitant to get back on, even with a mask and even with vaccinations.
Thank you, Pete Luger.
Assemblyman Phil Stack, representing Colony, Niskayuna, and Schenectady. We're facing an urgent climate crisis. We need to do something and stop just talking about it.
Well, one of the bills a lot of people support is the CCIA, basically a polluter penalty. A lot of politicians saying $15 billion unlikely to pass. How can we make this legislature actually do something like the CCIA?
I think the difficulty is that the CCIA is actually a market-based solution to the problem that has been advocated by economists for 50 years or more. It's very difficult. The legislature gets scared of impact on business, but it is only reasonable for the products to be priced in a manner that reflects their impact on the environment. So if the impact on the environment is too severe, then the price of the product will be too high and people won't buy it. And that's a good thing because it will force the manufacturers to take steps to stop producing things in that way. I also favor the stock transfer tax. As you know, the stock transfer tax allocates out of a $14 to $16 billion a year revenue stream, allocates about 13% to green energy. And the distinction with the stock transfer tax is it doesn't impose any costs on anyone in reality. It's just a transaction tax which can be borne by the purchasers of securities without much difficulty.
Thank you, Phil Stack.
I'm Bob Cohen, Policy and Research Director, Citizen Action of New York.
And why are you here today, Bob? And particularly, a lot of people are talking about the CCIA polluter penalty bill. What's that all about?
So the polluter penalty bill, or the CCIA, is an important initiative that not only is going to address climate change, but more importantly, or more significantly, it's going to transform New York State and move us toward a renewable energy economy. There are provisions in the bill that would allow community groups, for example, to provide weatherization. Cities can uplift their public transit systems, improve public transportation, etc. So we really believe that it's not only a way to address climate, but an opportunity to transform our society as it needs to be transformed.
And if people want to find out more about the CCIA bill, what's the best way to look that up?
Sure, they could certainly visit the Citizen Action webpage, www.citizenactionny.org, or they can actually call me personally at 518-265-6183.
Thank you, Bob Cohen.
Okay.
We're joined by Doug Bullock, one of the local labor activists, Solidarity Committee. Doug, what is labor hoping to see in terms of climate action at the state level this year?
Well, at all levels, I'm first vice president of the Albany County Central Federation of Labor. And at the state level especially, we want a divestment in the teachers' investment fund and retirement fund. The teacher's retirement fund is over-invested in fossil fuels, so we want that broken. We want that ameliorated. We want them to decrease on a regular basis the amount of money that they invest in fossil fuels. Also, you know, we've got some green energy coming to Albany in the port of Albany, and right now there's 850 jobs on tap for the port of Albany for, you know, wind energy. Then the wind turbines going down to Long Island and other places where they're constructed. So labor is really excited about that. And even the building trades have rallied around it. So this is one of the first times we've got the building trade unions together on a project, I think, in a long, long time.
Thank you, Doug Bullock.
My name is Alicia Bacon, and I am the Capital Region Organizer for Mothers Out Front, and also a former volunteer and intern at the Sanctuary for Independent Media. And I'm out here today to talk about passing the CCIA. We believe that this can not only address our painful past, but also help us embrace our future and really look towards tomorrow with hope and resilience. Passing the CCIA will fix problems by actually addressing them. And we have no more time to waste in cutting our carbon emissions, committing to ending our relationships with plastics and fossil fuels, and designing sustainable communities. So I ask all of you that are listening, what kind of humans do we want to be? What kind of beings do we want to be?